All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And welcome, America. Welcome to Veterans Radio. Radio for veterans, by veterans, to veterans, veterans everywhere. This is our story. This is what we want to do. This is what we want to talk to you about. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type, helicopter pilot in Vietnam 40 gazillion years ago. But we want to welcome you to our program today because I'm very excited about what we're going to be talking about. We have a young lady who has written a book entitled Gravity, and her name is Beth Underwood. And we had Beth on in, I believe it was April, when the book was first published. And we were talking about the story, and it's a story of a National Guard unit from Tennessee and their trials and tribulations of even trying to get to Iraq, and they didn't even know they were going to Iraq. And so it's going to be kind of interesting. So we're going to be talking with Beth, and we're going to be talking with a number of members of the National Guard unit that was sent to Iraq many, many years ago. It seems like I was just talking about this earlier. I think it's 10 years ago now. And we are also going to be talking about a lot of events coming up. And the first one I need to get to, of course, is that the Thunder Over Michigan is coming up again, and that's happening this weekend. This coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 28, 29, 30 of August at Willow Run. And we want you to make sure that you go to the YankeeAirMuseum.org to find out all the information. You're going to get to see jets, helicopters, the Blue Angels, the Navy stunt team is going to be there. I shouldn't say stunt. They probably wouldn't like that. But they are expert jet pilots, you know, and they do all kinds of really cool formation flying at 800 miles an hour and so forth. And the static displays there are always set up for you through the Yankee Air Museum. So we encourage you to go to YankeeAirMuseum.org to find out more information about Thunder Over Michigan. As again, this is coming up this coming weekend, August 28th, 29th, and 30th. I'm going to be there. My partner Bob's going to be there. We're hoping that you will be there. It's going to be really kind of cool to appreciate what is going on at the Yankee Air Museum with the Thunder Over Michigan. So make sure you go there. We'll see you there. Also, another event that is coming up, and this is something that we covered last year. We have a guest in our studio today, and her name is First Lieutenant Laura Cheerio, and she is in the Michigan National Guard, and she is a medical service officer. Laura, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
So Laura is with Veterans Refuge. And so can you tell me what Veterans Refuge is?
Veterans Refuge Network is a group of really passionate individuals, Jamie, Andrew, and myself. We formed a nonprofit organization. We just got our 501c3 in October of last year. We're trying to promote awareness to the rate of veteran suicide. Long-term goal is to have a treatment facility with all kinds of alternative therapies to treat veterans with PTSD, to seek an alternative approach rather than the 22 a day that commit suicide.
Right. You put up an amazing demonstration exhibit. I can't even think of the word. It really was impressive. Last year, for the month of September, and you put out 22 crosses a day to represent the 22 veterans that are committing suicide, correct?
Yes.
And you want to do that again this year?
Yes. We're going to do it a little bit different this year. We have a different approach to it. Instead of placing the 22 crosses every day to represent the 22 veterans that commit suicide, we're going to display all 660 throughout the entire month of September. We believe that it's going to have a bigger impact every day, so that's kind of where we're going with it this year.
Okay, and we are in the process of trying to find a location for these 660 crosses.
That's right. That's what we came on today. We're hoping that we can reach out and find someone maybe that can point us in the right direction. What we're looking for is a space that's about 200 feet wide, between 75 and 100 feet deep to host these crosses. And we're hoping that it can be a location that's widely seen enough by people that we can get the word out there and raise awareness to veteran suicide.
Right. We want to find a location where there's a lot of traffic and where a lot of people can see these crosses that are going to be displayed. And they're about, 18 inches high?
Yeah.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. And it's a very powerful sight to see. I was fortunate last year to see it on the first day when there were only 20, and on the last day when there were 600. It's a very emotional thing, I'm sure, for a lot of people. And so we encourage you. How would they get, if they have, somebody has a nice big piece of property in downtown, whatever it happens to be, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, we are on Facebook and Twitter, Veterans Refuge Network. You can also reach us on email, veteransrefugenetwork@gmail.com. We're also on Blogspot, veteransrefugenetwork.blogspot.com.
And, or you can always send me an email to Dale@VeteransRadio, and we'll pass along the information. We are hoping to get them a spot at a major intersection where we can draw as much attention to the issue of veteran suicide as we possibly can. Because if we don't talk about it, people will stop thinking about it. And if they stop thinking about it, then treatment will start shrinking, and we can't have that happen. So I'm encouraging everybody to go to the veteransrefugenetwork.blogspot.com. They are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. I'm sure that they accept donations. If you can help them out, they would like that also. But find that location for them, because we want to do this starting on September 1st.
That's right. And this year, we are asking for donations to sponsor Across. Since there's 22 every day that commit suicide, we're asking that those that sponsor Across donate $22. And we're hoping that by the end, we'll have all 660 crosses sponsored. And the proceeds for that will go to Stiggy's Dogs, another nonprofit mm-hmm. organization that helps veterans with canine therapy.
Yeah,
so they sponsor the
companionships.
Dogs.
Right, yeah, we have talked about Stiggy Dogs on Veterans Radio. So $22, they can make a donation, and that they would sponsor one of the crosses.
Yes.
All right, well, count me in. So you have one
you.
At least, I know. So we'll take care of that one. And we've been talking with Laura Cheerio, a National Guard First Lieutenant, Medical Service Officer, and also one of the founders of Veterans Refuge Network. And we're looking for a location where we can put 660 crosses, folks. So 200 feet wide, 75 foot deep. They'll even come out and cut the grass, weed whack the place. They'll even clean it up. If it's not cleaned up right now and it's a great location, we'll all come out and cut the grass and everything before you. So please get a hold of us and we'll take care of that. Laura, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you. We very much appreciate it.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a real quick break here, and then we will be back on Veterans Radio, and we'll be talking to Beth Underwood, the author of Gravity. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the ones who died, who gave that right to me.
And we're back on Veterans Radio today, and we're going to be talking with the author of the book Gravity, which is about a group of the K Troop, three of the 273rd ACR, Tennessee Army National Guard. That's a mouthful. But we want to welcome Beth Underwood back to Veterans Radio. Beth, good afternoon.
Hi, Dale. It's an honor to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. It really is a pleasure, and I'm so grateful that you agreed to be back on the program, because this book is it's such a powerful book, and I guess that would be the first thing I would say. But it is a story of this unit in Tennessee that gets called up, and their world kind of turns upside down, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it sure does. Yeah, that's. I think that when you think about the National Guardsmen, you don't think about them deploying to Iraq, and you sure don't see them deploying to the Triangle of Death.
Well, I let's go back and figure out the motivation for writing the story, Beth. How did you get involved with this group?
When I was living in Tennessee, I hit about the time that the 278 was deployed. And to be quite truthful with you, I really had no idea what the 278th was, nor that it even existed at that point. And it was a Veterans Day, Veterans Day 2004. I had gone to cover the event for a local paper, and as I stood there, the square was just packed with men and women and children, young, old, and every person around me had a connection to somebody in the National Guard. There was a local armory there, and it, you know, when these roughly 4,000 people from the 278th were deployed, you couldn't find a family that was not affected. And at this point, when the National Guard was being deployed, this small town that I was living in was affected with the deaths of a couple of Marines.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sorry?
No, that's right. I remember that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And so, no problem. So, their deaths really just brought a somber, as you can imagine, mood to this, to the whole community. And this was not something that was, you know, that was specifically regulated to one place. It encompassed the entire state of Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very tough time, I'm sure, of course, for the guys who were deploying, because they just never expected this. But for the families, too, it was such an adjustment. It was a big deal, something that none of them had faced in roughly 50 years.
Right. Well, when did they deploy?
They actually, I don't have an exact date, but it was November of, probably mid-November of 2004. They were there for Thanksgiving. They were in Kuwait, actually, for Thanksgiving of 2004.
Okay. So the war had basically just begun,
mm-hmm.
and then they were called up right away. And I want to find out a little bit more about this National Guard. So we have a whole number of guests that we're going to be having on the program with Beth. We only have four phone lines, so we're going to be kind of playing a little Russian roulette with hoping that we can keep everybody on. But right now I want to bring on Mac McCullough. Mac, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Doing very well. And you were part of this unit that was sent over to Iraq. And I wanted, if you could, just kind of let our audience in on the thought process that was going through your head when you found out that you were even being considered for being called up.
Well, you know, I was a recruiter at the time, and typically the recruiters would always get left back to run the family readiness group, and I kind of stood by one principle, and that is you never ask someone to do something that you wouldn't do yourself, and so I volunteered to go, and there was still a part of me, because for years in Tennessee, the National Guard hadn't deployed for a very long time. In fact, I believe that one of the things I'd heard several of the recruiters I worked with say was that, you know, that we would get deployed when the Russians came over the foothills mountains in Maryville. And so it was one of those things of where I thought at first maybe it was going to be an exercise to see if we could do it, if they could get the guard stood up. And so I was going back and forth between the two. Maybe we'll go, maybe we won't go. So there was a lot of uncertainty to it because of the way that it was being described to us. Even while we were going through training, it just didn't seem as though, we were doing training at Camp Shelby like trench warfare.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a level of, yeah, I'm not really sure that they're going to send a guard for this. And but there was that level of uncertainty, and we were just training and wanted to know more about what it was that we were going to be trained for, what the mission was going to be, and we really didn't get a good idea as to what that would be until close to the end of our training, when we were told where we'd be going to in Iraq. And I think we all kind of were a bit surprised when they were talking about being in Fab el-Rayyan in Balad, just north of Baghdad. And because that's not where the other units there in Tennessee were going to. And so there was a lot of anxiety after that point, from the point that we left Camp Shelby to cross in the pond, because there was a lot of unknowns there.
Well, you guys had the you know, I guess for a civilian audience, you know, the National Guard, we all look at the National Guard and we say, okay, they train 1 weekend a month and then they train 2 weekend, you know, 2 weeks in the summertime. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mainly?
You know, the typical idea, you know, the National Guard, we're the part where the Constitution says that each state will have a well-formed militia.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the foundation that this country was founded on. And so, yeah, the National Guard is aligned more towards what the reservists look like. And each one of them, of course, supporting their respective states. So it does, you know, most people say the same thing. Well, I think the National Guard should be, you know, stateside and taking care of the states. Not really full in understanding that. I don't think they understand that since the Army is a force of occupation, the National Guard is where the majority of that force comes from. Because these are doctors and lawyers and police officers and professionals as well as just teachers and students.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it is the community. And I talked to Beth once before and I told her, I said, you know, when the 101st gets deployed, you've got Fort Campbell going to war, but when they call out the National Guard, America is going to war because these are the people that work in the community. They do jobs for their state, and that's how we support, and that's also how we serve.
Well, and you were called up for training, which was about a year's worth, did you, if I recall right in reading?
Well, the training that we were called out for at the Mold Center, we started in June. And so we spent from June of 2004 up until November was when we finally landed in Kuwait. So
Okay. We
spent most of that time training in Camp Shelby as well as NTC in Fort Irwin, California.
I would imagine that you were kind of surprised when you were sent to Fort Ord.
Well, in order for you to be certified to cross the pond, of course, they've got it set up now to where you have to do either a NTC or a JRTC, which is just a training center to be certified. There's a lot more. They don't just do the thing they used to do back in the day where they would just activate a group of soldiers and send them across the pond. They actually have a level of risk management, so to speak, that I don't think they had in place before.
Oh, okay. All right. Tell me a little bit about the people that were in the Guard with you from Tennessee.
Oh, man, those guys. You know, there are certain things about the military that you know, there's a, when you see it in the movies and stuff, there's a rigidness, there's a discipline. When you get down into the weeds of the National Guard, these guys have been together for a long time, and they're still very much ingrained in that Southern culture. And so they bind themselves to one another, not just out of the fact that wear the uniform together, but because they grow up in the same communities and they share a lot of the same experiences. And myself, coming from the Marine Corps, you know, a lot of the people that I was serving the Marines with, they were from all over America.
Mm-hmm.
I had guys from Hawaii and some from Washington. But with the Guard, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time because you're, you know, you get homesick on active duty and nobody really understands, you know, you get to missing that little fishing spot that you had back up on City Cove Creek there in Madisonville. But when you're deploying with the Guard, you get homesick and the next thing you know, you find out five or six people in this platoon all fish in the same spot that you do.
Your secret fishing hole is not so secret so, anymore, right?
So they're a lot closer, and that's also what makes it, I don't know. Like I said, you have to take the good with the bad with that because as they are submitted more to each other because they do come from the same community, that's the reason why the loss affects you a lot worse than I think it does. Not that any loss is taken well even for the active forces, but for the Guard it hurts a lot more because you know how this is going to affect your community. You're looking right at the neighbors of this
mm-hmm.
soldier that just died, and you're looking at their brothers and their friends and their teachers and their coaches, and it brings a level of, I don't know, it brings a level that of pain that I don't think I felt when I was on the active duty. because, again, you still have to go back to the community and you still have to face that community.
I was going to say, you face all the memories every time you see that fishing hole or something like that, you know, that you guys had talked about. Beth, I want to bring you back on here for a second. We're having difficulty getting a hold of Vince. So, but tell me about this group of men from this National Guard unit. I mean, Mac just mentioned the idea that there were coaches, and the story of Gravity is about this town more than anything else and the people, right?
It is. It's, I really feel like it's more of a story of heart than anything.
Well, the idea, tell me about some of the players. You know, because I'm always fascinated when I was reading the book, and I read it again this last week. And it, folks, I strongly recommend reading Gravity. It's there are smiles, there are laughs, there are tears, there is gut-wrenching trauma, but it's such a powerful, powerful story about humankind and how we react to things and how we love each other. And it was just so meaningful to reread it that. These men that have known each other since they were in high school, or since they were in the third grade or the first grade, and you know, you have, as Mac pointed out, one of the people was a football coach, and some of the guys in the unit were players of his.
Mm-hmm. Eric Weaver, and he is now the principal at Sweetwater High School.
I love that name, Sweetwater. It just drives me crazy.
Well, you know. And Eric, for example, Eric Weaver, he to me, you know, he's a big burly guy, and he's got a deep Southern drawl, and you know, it doesn't matter what you do to the guy, it's hard to get him to crack a smile. At least it's hard for me, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's just no nonsense, and you never quite, I don't think you ever quite knew where he stood, or at least that's the impression I get. Because he's very reserved in his emotions. And of course, you know, as I said, he was a football coach, and a history teacher, ironically enough. And, Vince was one of his, players from early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had their captain, as you and I had discussed before, Paul Shannon was, one of the crew chiefs. Crew chief of Super 6-2 in Mogadishu. So, you know, here you've got a guy that I think at that point he had 18 years of active army going into this thing. So you've really got a diverse background between people who have served for 20 years, people who've never been called to active mm-hmm. duty. And then some, like Andy Newman, for example. Well, he had just been, he was in Iraq shortly after the statue of Saddam Hussein fell.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had a few years there. And, I think as the book points out, he had had his own share of difficulties when he had, come back to the States the first time around. And had gotten himself into quite a bit of trouble in Iraq, actually. So, you know, you really have, I think Paul Shannon was always wondering whether or not, at least in the beginning, whether or not these guys could be counted on. Because, you know, number one, they weren't his guys to begin with, so what's he getting? Is he getting a bunch of rejects? That's usually the way it goes. I think you throw in a couple of... good guys, and the rest of them are sort of the ones you want to get rid of.
Well, this
so
is...
you had a little bit of everything, and a little bit of, you know, every personality. You theoretically, you could have had some huge clashes that didn't work right, you know?
Right. Well, I'm thinking about it's when I'm reading the book and hearing you talk about it is, you know, you've got men in this unit that are ranged from 18 years old or 19 years old up to about 45 almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep, that's about right. You know, and in some cases, not in their case, but there were people that were with Well, I guess actually in Knife Truth, there actually was a father and son who were over there together, as well as brothers, a couple of brothers in Knife Truth.
Well, we're coming up on a break here in just a minute. We're talking with Beth Underwood, who is the author of the book Gravity, which is about a Tennessee National Guard unit that was sent to Iraq in late 2004. And we wanted to, when we come back after the news at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be bringing on the medic, because we're going to talk about probably the most traumatic event that occurred during their tour in Iraq on August 22nd. And so that's what we're talking about today. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We will be back shortly. Stay tuned for the news, and we'll be right back. Back on Veterans Radio, and that song was sent to us by Dave LeBun. It's called American Vets, and to find out more about his music, you can go to songsbydave.com, songsbydave.com. I've been receiving a lot of music that has been written by veterans recently, especially, it seems, and over the years we've gotten a lot also. So I think we're going to try and put together a program here in the next couple of weeks where we're going to be playing music that is sent to us by veterans, and that's just one. So if you have any music out there that you'd like to get in on, get on some playtime, send it to us at Veterans Radio. You can find our address and all the information on our website, veteransradio.net, which reminds me that you can be listening to the program, which I hope some of you are out there listening to it on our internet website, and you can contact us through Facebook and also through Twitter. So we've got all that covered. Right now we're talking with Beth Underwood, who is the author of a book entitled Gravity. It's a story of a National Guard unit from Tennessee that was sent over to Iraq and their tour of duty over there. And Beth, I want to thank you for writing this book. It's such a great story. Mac, are you still there?
Hello.
Who am I?
Yeah, this is Doc Mahutka.
Hi, Doc. How are you? This is Dale Thrumberry. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to have to go back and make connections, it looks like, with Beth and Mac. But, Doc, while I've got you on the line, are you from Tennessee originally also?
I am not. I was with the 128th out of Wisconsin.
Okay. So this is where I wanted to do that little transition, and maybe you can help me out with it then. How did this unit from Tennessee end up with Wisconsin?
So they were an armored unit, and we're an infantry unit, and they needed infantrymen to kind of fill the back of the Bradleys. So I believe there was a trade with the 278th Tennessee for we got K Troop, and they came and joined us, and we were the infantry. So
okay, the Beth mentions in the book Gravity that there was this kind of this little tension between Wisconsin and Tennessee, which is probably pretty normal when, you know, a unit is taken from one company and sent to another one. Is that something that you felt or heard or thought about at all?
There was definitely some tension, and I believe that K Troop kind of felt abandoned initially from the 278th. They were kind of farmed out to the 128th mm-hmm. Infantry out of Wisconsin, and I believe they felt abandoned, but in the end, it all ended up working out. The 278th, the K Troop that was with us, they were very proud. I've gotten a lot of requests for the Red Arrow. That's our emblem we wear on our shoulder, and and I've sent the fellas a few of the Red Arrow, and they were very proud to be with us. So, and we were grateful to have them, and I'm very grateful to have been attached to them. While I was kind of the last medic coming up, all the other medics had been assigned out to their line units, I kind of drew the short straw and was put with K-Troop, but in the end it was actually a blessing in disguise. I can't think of another unit I'd rather have served with. So,
well, have we gotten contact again with everybody?
I have. I stayed in contact for quite a while with everybody. Big Weave or Sergeant First Class Weaver, and I've went to out there for a wedding with Billy. Billy was getting married, and I went out there and a wedding, and yeah, it was a good time.
Tell me about your mission when you arrived in Iraq. You were sent to the Triangle of Death, as it's called, and you replaced I believe it was a National Guard unit from New York. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Yep. National Guard unit out of New York, and they had laid the groundwork down pretty well. So we fell into a good mission. They explained it well, and day in and day out, it was tedious. It was taxing. I initially started running two a days, and then after a few months, I just couldn't take it anymore, going out with both elements. So I was put, strictly with Weed's element. Mm-hmm. And then high priority cases, I would go out with Tippin's element, but.
Okay.
Or high priority missions, I would go out with Tippin's element. So.
Mac, we've got you back on the line. Hello, Mac.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Thought I lost you there. So we were just talking to Doc about your missions when you arrived in Iraq and how you had replaced the New York National Guard. Can you tell me a little bit about the missions that you did when you started going outside the wire?
I went out with there was a couple that just stood out from New York, and it was Staff Sergeant Law and Staff Sergeant Bowden. They were the first two that I met. When we landed, we did the advance party, and when I got there, I started looking to make a link up, just as soon as I could. And those two, they were really good as far as they showed me pictures of the areas that we were going to, people that they had that they were suspected in different villages. They gave us points of contact in each one of the villages that they had done, gave me a back brief on a lot of the things that they had already had going on. I would say that laying that groundwork with those guys led to us being able to achieve what we were able to achieve there, because they really did. I mean, they cared about us, and they wanted to make sure that we had all the information available to us. And so they would just right away just made room for me in their vehicle and started taking me out to show them. And I mean, there's some of that where they're relieved that they've got somebody coming right now, because there's like a light at the end of the tunnel that my replacements are here. But, the level that those two went to just make sure that I had enough intel to be able to keep my guys safe, those were, I mean, just stellar NCOs that came from New York. And And you could really, you really got a sense from those guys, because, 9/11 affected those guys directly, and they really made it a point, that, there was no love lost between them and any of the things that they had to do there. They were very determined. But all in all, I mean, they did a really good job of making sure that we had enough information that I've never gotten a chance to think of. I've never spoke to either one of those two again, but they represented the New York Army National Guard well.
Well, now you just thanked them, so hopefully they're tuning in. Tell me about what your typical missions. What was your average day like? Were they all patrols, or did you go out and, arrest people, or what happened?
Yes.
all of the above, okay.
typically, yes. I mean, we did a lot of patrols, and during those patrols and stuff, there would be times where we may have to go do a what's called a soft raid. And a soft raid is basically just a meet and greet, and it's, It's designed where you do a check every once in a while to see what's going on in the area. But you also try to, you know, I know people don't like the terminology of win hearts and minds, but truthfully, it's more effective that way because, you know, Saddam, before we had got there, had done a really good job. And it's funny when you hear it here in the States that Saddam had done a really good job of telling his people that when we got there, that we were going to rape their women, steal their land, and take their oil. Well,
right. You've
basically just motivated the Iraqi male. All three of those things is what they live for. And so by saying that we were there for those things, when we showed up to do a soft raid and just meet with the family, then they started to realize that we were human too, that it wasn't the case. We weren't there to do those things. And even there was still some level of that, you know, you would hear it when you got home, or you're there for oil. I can promise you, I think we did secure, you know, you can ask Doc, I think we've, pulled a couple of missions where, they would go out and sometimes the, anti-coalition forces would blow up the pipelines out there. But for the most part, that's all we did. We secured it so they could fix it, and then we would continue to patrol our areas and make sure that the, holding sites were secured and that people knew who we were and trained in the Iraqi army.
Well, we are talking with some of the participants in the Iraq War, and the book that we're talking about today is Gravity by Beth Underwood. And Beth, I'm not neglecting you. I just want to make sure that you're still out there too. This comes to the hard part now. Let's go back to August 22nd. And Mac and Doc, if you could tell us what happened on that day, and Mac, I'll start with you first.
Well, we've gotten briefed that Jalen's had picked up activity out at the Mathana Chemical Weapons Depot. Jalen's being basically just a camera that overwatches the chemical weapons depot that we're out there and. Some of the anti-coalition forces had started placing 155 rounds on some of the bunkers, and they were trying to blow their way into those bunkers to get those weapons out. And the mission that we drew that day was to go out there, and we were going to take some of the engineers as well as some of the chemical operations team out there to basically do an assessment of the damage that had been done as well as have the engineers fix anything that had been damaged and repair that. And so we had been sent out there for that. We had to escort those guys out to Mathana. And on the way out there, we discovered that they had done a lot of the what we call PCCs, the pre-combat checks, or PCIs, mm-hmm. which is the pre-combat inspection, and any of that vehicles. And the popping stats, and we had a Bozer trailer, and we had a very difficult time getting into the objective of getting to Mathana, and then once we got there, we got set up. We pulled our set the perimeter security and allowed them to go in and do their mission. And in the meantime, they called for another vehicle to come back and pick up the dozer, because we didn't want to continue around with this vehicle that had a flat on it. And they met us out on the hardball to come back out. When I say the hardball, the fault route,
mm-hmm.
Back out of Mathana to head back out to Tampa. And so once that mission was done and we met the engineers and met the on the hardball, we continued to take the route back up to Mathana. And or out of Mathana back to Tampa to go back into our sector. And as we finally fell all the vehicles in line and we were heading back, once we crossed this one little curve in the road, now again, depending on if you're talking to me or if you're talking to Big Weed didn't see it, and mm-hmm. I did. But once once our lead vehicle crossed over this one point, the IED was detonated, and apparently the anti-coalition forces had taken and cut out the center of the road. They'd cut out the asphalt and pulled the top of the asphalt up, dug down inside of it, placed two anti-tank mines in the road, and place the asphalt back, then cut into the asphalt, cut a small. They dropped a command detonated wire, which is basically just a wire that's running straight from a detonator to the anti-tank mines. Cut a trench in the asphalt, use black tar grease to kind of smooth over everything that had cut out, then run the wire down into the river and then into a little high position along the water's edge. And they were using the telephone poles to put our vehicles. And once they had crossed the telephone pole that marked where the IED had been placed, then, of course, they detonated it. And it detonated on the lead vehicle. And it blew my lead vehicle about 75 meters up in the air. As the vehicle blew up, Sergeant Newman was ejected from the back door, and he fell out onto the ground. And Sergeant Thomas, he was ejected through the gunner's, he was ejected through the gunner's hatch, and took his foot at the time. I know
this is very difficult, Mac, and I appreciate you talking about it. Let me give you a little break here. Doc, what did you find when you got there?
We had been hit before in the past, and initially, like, we were lucky, and the vehicle that was hit would kind of always push through. So when it's the biggest cloud of smoke I've ever seen in my life. I mean, when Mac said it went up in the air, it was all black. And then we tried to raise them on the radio, and we couldn't get them, and I was just hoping they had gotten through. And then the wind blew a little bit, and I saw Newman stumbling around. So I initially thought they got through. Okay, there's a survivor. They got through, and then the wind, it was just a slight gust, saw him, and then the big gust of wind, and it blew that black cloud of smoke away, and we saw the damage that had really taken place, and there was nothing left of that Humvee. And so we started calling up contact. I jumped out and went to work. Initially ran up, and Thomas was crawling out from underneath. Grabbed him and brought him back, and then just kind of went to work, really. Everybody jumped in, and we started securing the area. And without going into too much detail to kind of spare the families, you know, any details of that, unless of course they want it, but maybe that's not something for the air. It was a rough day, a very rough day. And we were so far out there. Normally, when we had been hit before, and if I had to take care of somebody, the chopper was, the medevac was on top of us before I even had time to get through half of my treatment. And this time, we had a satellite phone, but it was in that lead vehicle. And so we had to sit on those guys for which seemed like forever. Mac, how long was it actually? How long were we out there for?
Well, from the initial contact before that medevac got there, we sat out there for almost an hour before the medevac made it to us.
It seemed like 5 years.
I can understand that. And you lost somebody right away. Is that correct?
That's correct. Joey Hunt.
Okay. And then also Victor. Victor Lawrence? Is it Lawrence?
Lawrence. Yeah. Yep.
I didn't want to mispronounce that, but he survived initially, but then died on the way to as he was medevaced, correct?
And you know, the thing of it is, and you know, I don't think I've ever gotten to tell Doc that he has always been the definition of a combat medic for his actions that day. And I think the real tragedy is that Doc has never been at least recognized by the Army. He never received his combat medic badge, but in the hearts of those of us that were there that saw him, I mean, Doc, man, you're the eighth, bro.
You can tell how important these things are. Beth, are you still there?
I am, and I need to second that. I
totally agree. Everything I know about Doc's actions that day, just, I have no words.
I know. It's amazing. We're talking with the author of the book, Gravity, and I'm going to have to take a real quick break here because we got to switch out phones. And, Doc, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio today. And, Mac, you probably want to talk to Doc off the air at some point, but you can hang on if you would like. We're going to try and get a hold of Joey Hunt's mom and dad. So we're going to take a quick break while we switch out here. Doc, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. Hope to talk to you again soon. We'll be right back.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, sir, honestly. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
Of the United States in order to form a more perfect union.
I have a dream. A dream that one day
we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights.
That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we've been talking with the author of Gravity, which is a story of a Tennessee National Guard unit that was called up to active duty, was sent to Iraq, and on August 22nd of, I'm going to mess this up, I already know it, 2005 or 4? Somebody correct me. Anybody?
Oh, it was 2005.
2005, okay, good. So 10 years ago yesterday, one of their lead vehicles was hit by an IED, thrown up into the air 70 meters. Sounded like a huge explosion. One man was killed instantly, and another one died later on. And if we have the connection, right now we have the parents of Joey Hunt. Joey was unfortunately one of the men who was killed during that IED attack. And I'm not sure who I'm going to be talking to first, but I'm either talking to Marcia or Tim Hunt.
Ooh. Hold on. We got to connect them again.
Oh, we lost them. Okay. Let me go back to Beth then. So, Beth, tell me about this. What happened when these guys came home? This is something that really impressed you, I know.
Yeah, the as Matt can attest, you know, when these guys left, the people just lined the street. They lined highways just for miles and would stop whatever they were doing. And, you know, they had their signs of, you know, my heart is going to Iraq or whatever. And then even when some of them came home on leave, they still, the reception that they got was just overwhelming in a positive way.
We've reestablished our contact right now, so I'm not sure who I am going to be talking with. Am I talking with Marcia or Tim?
This is Marcia.
Hi, Marcia, and welcome to Veterans Radio. Thank you so much for talking with us today. I know that this whole thing has to be very difficult for you.
It has been, yes.
I don't even know how to phrase a question, but... let me go back to Beth's book because it's such a powerful story, and she does such a wonderful job of describing what a wonderful young man Joey was. That and she does an excellent job of describing, I think, the emotional trauma that you and your husband went through. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you feel today? Let's look at it that way. Where is Joey in your heart today?
Well, yesterday was the 10-year reunion anniversary. We call it an angelversary. And every year on August 22nd, we try to do some kind of memorial. And all week, I was kind of in a good place. And I told everybody that I felt like I could smile again. And it took 10 years to get there.
Well, I can only imagine the difficulty with that. It's, you know, I've known so many parents now from doing this program for so long that have, you know, how long it takes for them to smile again and relax. You have a grandson, though, don't you?
Joey had two sons. We have two grandsons.
And are they anything like Joey?
Oh, yes. From their mischievousness to their looks, the way they hold themselves, it's just looking at Joey again.
That's always to your advantage. Grandchildren are just wonderful. And,
oh yes.
And they can you know, even though you've lost the one that you love the most, they do fill in well. They do fill in well. I want to thank you so very much for even just being on briefly to share this unfortunate anniversary. But the idea of these men, my guess is that you still see many of the people of the unit. Are they still coming around?
Slowly. I think it's been as hard on them as it has been on us. And slowly they've come to us, and we do see some of them. And sometimes it's a difficult thing for them, and other times it seems like they need it.
Yeah.
We enjoy their company. We like to talk about Joey, and I hope that helps them.
Well, I'm sure that maybe we can get some more to come back and drop by and talk to you. Sit on the porch and tell stories.
That'd be great.
Sit on the porch and tell stories, right? Maybe even go to that fishing
yeah.
hall that they were talking about earlier on. I want to thank you so very much for giving us just a bit of your time today, Marcia. And please,
well, we appreciate you remembering Joey.
Well, we do. And also and tell your husband we feel the same way.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we've got about a minute to go. Beth and Mac, you're back on there, as I said. The book is Gravity. Read the stories, folks. You got to go get this. Beth, where can they get this book?
It's available at Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble. It's also available on my website at Beth Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, BethWrightUnderwood.com. Anybody, you can hook me up on Facebook. Also, if you get a hold of Joyce Faulkner or Red Engine Press.
Well, we'll
there
make sure people you can find it, and we'll make sure you do. So there's our music. That means we got about 20 seconds to go. So we want to thank you both and all of you from the Tennessee National Guard for being on Veterans Radio today. And, Beth, we'll be talking to you again, I'm sure, when your next story comes out. But in the meantime, we want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio. Make sure you tune in next week. Until then, you are dismissed.